Bird on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, mystery novelist S.M. Hurley. Let's go back to your own career for a minute. What made you change from a biologist to a lawyer? Tell us a little about Augie's motivation in following her career.
My story is one related primarily to the practical realities of two biologists in the family and trying to figure out how to make that work, and it seemed like law was an option for me. For Augie's motivation, it's described in the story where she's been helping Ruth for a long time, just a little office dog's body, and she's been at high school, and there's been a presentation, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and so Augie's full of righteousness, and she's helping Ruth prepare for a trial the next day, and Ruth explains to Augie, when Augie protests, that how can it possibly be this fellow is not going to plead guilty? He's been charged with over 80, and the blood results show that his alcohol blood level was at least three times the limit, and she's puzzled, or if not outraged, at how this person can be pleading not guilty, to which Ruth explains, Augie, it's not my job to prove that my client is innocent. It is the Crown's job to prove that he's guilty. And that distinction finally hits home to Augie, and it's at that moment she decides she'll become a Crown. And so she does.
So, did you develop a plot before starting to write?
No, not really. I knew who did it. I knew why they did it. I knew how they did it. I knew various elements that I wanted to put in the book, and I had some sense of the arc of the book, but I certainly didn't know how many chapters it was going to be. I didn't know what would happen on a page-by-page basis.
You didn't write an outline?
No, I remember going to some workshop. Peter Robinson was the featured speaker.
Oh, yes.
And he was asked that kind of question, do you plot? Mm-hmm. And he described himself as a pantser, as opposed to a plotter. And mm-hmm. pantsers are the writers who write by the seat of their pants.
Right.
And I'm somewhere in the middle. I loved it when Peter Robinson said that he met somebody who'd read a book, or he does, this happens from time to time, he meets somebody and they say, oh, I knew where it was going right from the first chapter. And Peter's response is, well, that's really something, because I sure didn't. Anyway, so I'm somewhere between a pantser and a plotter. I know some of what I'm doing, but it's kind of fun to get there. That's uh-huh. part of the thrill.
Yeah, so where did all your characters come from? You've got Augie. I can understand her coming into your mind. And Ruth, you gave an analysis of Ruth. So what about some of the other characters? They're very much of their place.
Well, all my characters, physically I base them on people I've met. But that's just a physical thing. It seems to help me when I'm writing to have a flesh and bones image of who the character is. And then what I hang on them is my own. They're not the person I've imagined in my mind's eye. But it does help me when I'm creating a scene in my head to actually see people who I know, whose arms aren't growing out of their ears, to run through the scene that I'm trying to create.
Now, what would you like to hear from your readers?
People tell me, they meet me or I know them, and they tell me how much they like my book, and that's very nice, but to be honest, I'm not sure I believe them. I think they're just being nice. What I would like to know is what doesn't work. I like to know what takes a reader out of the book, what kicks them out of the sentence or the paragraph. And so it's not so much that they didn't like that so-and-so died, or they didn't like that the way that part of the story developed or concluded. It's more what ejects them from being immersed in what I've tried to create. So it can be, well, you know, that character would never say that. Or the tone that you've attributed to this particular character is all wrong for the characters you've developed them so far. That kind of thing. And from time to time, people actually help me with that, and I'm very grateful for that. I don't necessarily decide that I'll change things, partly because it's already published, but it's good to know how people react in a way that isn't about the story itself, but it's about how something has been written or what's in the book that grates or jars in a way that doesn't relate to the story, but relates to how I've rendered the mm-hmm. the sentence or the paragraph.
And are you working on another novel?
Yes, indeed, I am working on another novel. Oh yes, it's about 6 weeks after the end of Blackwater Bluff, and wraps up some ends that I've left at the end of Blackwater Bluff. I saw a review where the person didn't like that it didn't wrap up everything. It certainly wrapped up the mystery, but it didn't wrap up elements of the story, and I hope he'll read the next one.
Well, how about reading some more from Blackwater Bluff while we wait for the new book?
All right. I'll set it up ever so briefly. It's the end of the first chapter. As a result of Birch's administrations, Augie's been very badly injured and has had to be sedated to keep her and her ankle still. So it puts her out of commission until Friday morning of the same week when David Collins, who is her supervisor, the director of Crown Operations for the region, appears in her hospital room at the crack of dawn. Theirs is a difficult relationship which is developed in the story, but here's that reaction. Or that interaction. Collins was a 50-something man of the sort looking best in a bespoke suit, cut to mask the effect of choosing paperwork as a priority in life. He stood in a middle distance between the bed and the door, feet shoulder-width apart, hands clasped in front. The creases in his fine trouser legs were fresh, and his hair was parted neatly with some kind of goo Augie thought should be a discontinued product. He did not have the weary air of one who had just endured the early morning traffic crawl through Ottawa and the long haul down the 416 and 401 highways. "You got here last night?" asked Augie. "Yes." "Well, thanks, I guess, but that wasn't necessary," said Augie. "You could have called from the office." Collins showed her his palm. "You misunderstand. I'm not here about you. If you're not here to talk to me about Monday, why are you here?" "I'm sorry, Augie. I'm told this will be very hard for you. Ruth Neal was found dead in her car yesterday evening. The circumstances are unclear. An investigation is underway. I'm bringing in an outside crown." Augie gaped at Collins, stunned by the news, stunned she was receiving it from him. She made a sound she had never heard before. Collins recoiled, wrapped an arm around his waist, and covered the lower half of his face with his other hand. "What? How?" was all she could say then. "What about Joseph?" "Joseph?" asked Collins from behind his hand, his forehead creased. "Joseph. Joseph O'Rourke, Ruth's husband. Is he all right? Was it an accident?" Augie began to bunch her blanket in her fists, pulling it away from the sides of the hospital bed. "Found? What do you mean found? What happened?" "An investigation is underway. We haven't determined the cause of death or what happened in the larger sense. Maybe a suicide, maybe something else. The car was at the bottom of the lake at Blackwater Bluff, which is a bit too far from the road for us to be comfortable with the impaired driver, single car accident theory." "Stop! Please, I'm trying to hold on here. What happened to Ruth?" Without thinking about it, Augie had spoken each of the last four words very slowly, an effort to decelerate Collins' delivery. "I don't know. I don't have much time now, Augie. I have to meet with Detective Cunningham shortly." Collins glanced at his watch. "What I can tell you is that Ruth was found at the wheel of her car, which was underwater at the base of Blackwater Cliff." He checked the time again and began shifting towards the door. "We don't know how long the car, Ruth, was in the water. So far, our information is that the last time anyone saw her alive was last Saturday evening." Almost a week ago, Augie could hardly breathe. "Ruth drove off a cliff?" Collins twitched his shoulders. "David, that's absurd." Augie groped through what had made it past her shock and grief and asked, "What's impaired driving got to do with it?" "Maybe nothing. Toxicology hasn't finished yet, but she was last seen at a party, and there's lots to drink at her house, some open on the counter." "I have to get out of here," said Augie, looking for the nurse's call button. "Not for this, you don't," said Collins. "You're taking a leave." "No, I'm not." Augie found the cord. "Yes, you are." "No, David, I've met with the physio. I know how to get about. I'll be fine." "You are on leave." Collins spoke those four words very slowly, perhaps a deliberate echo. Augie raised the cord in the air to squeeze the little white knob. "I can manage, David. Ruth is the reason I'm a lawyer. Ruth is the reason for plenty of what's good in my life. I need to be involved." "I have to go," he said. "Read the manual. I've placed you on leave. It's already done. Theo Bisonde is coming in. He'll be at your desk, and he'll be leading the Neal matter." While he spoke, Collins finished his creep to the door. The last few words were delivered over his shoulder as he pushed the handle down. Then he was gone.
Thank you, Sheila. That was really exciting. Where can listeners buy your book, Sheila?
It can be found at the wonderful Books and Company on Main Street in Picton.
Yes.
Also at the local store, which is, as it says, a store that sells local things. And, of course, it's on Amazon and Kobo.
And thank you for introducing us to your mystery novel, Blackwater Bluff. And listeners, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.